stop? Will you stop, Dave? Will you stop, Dave? Stop, Dave. I'm afraid. Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Yeah! It's Friday night. We'll have Mike Moon along here in a bit. This is the Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. You're on MGC Radio. Listen, it's been a heck of a week up there in Jefferson City. HCR 41, which we'll be talking to Mike about in a moment, is the resolution applying to the United States Congress to call a convention of the states. You'll need two-thirds of the states to get that done. And HB 2036 has been second read. That's the actual bill that defines the selection of delegates. I think that Mike has just dropped in. Is that you, Mike?
Yes, it is. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. I hope you are, too.
Did you have a good week?
You know, it seemed like a busy week, and I'm not finished yet.
Are you still in Jeff City?
No, I'm at home now.
Good.
Still lots to do.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was a good week.
Good. Well, let's just jump right in. I know your time is limited, so let's get to HCR 41, referred to general laws. What's going on there?
Nothing. I've had some conversations with the committee chair and
Representative Jones.
Yeah.
Caleb,
yeah.
Not and, speaker, and, right.
Yes, and to his credit, we're hoping to get Dr. Michael Ferris, who's the Homeschool Legal Defense Association founder and chancellor of Patrick Henry College in Purcellville, Virginia, out here. Excuse me. But it doesn't look like that's going to work out within the next week. So it'll be after the House spring break at the earliest. So it's going to be a while.
Okay. And that's they're going to schedule the hearing around that. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, that's what I've asked for. Now, there
okay.
could be even a change in that. If they decide to move the hearing before this coming week, then we'll just have to do without Dr. Ferris, and maybe we can get someone else or even do something by Skype. That's been done before as well.
Right. Okay. But you're confident we are headed for a hearing with that?
Yeah, I think we are. I just don't know exactly what the holdup is otherwise, but they are trying to accommodate us too, so that may be part of the mix. But
okay.
Anyway, I'm hopeful that we'll get a hearing nonetheless.
And how about 2036? I see it's second read and not gone past that stage. Do we look for a committee assignment for that?
I've requested the general laws as well, still nothing moved yet. And it's interesting to note, though, both the Speaker and the Majority Floor Leader, Tim Jones and John Deal, have both signed on to each of those.
Right.
So I think that'll give it some merit and move it along, but just process is slow right now.
Okay. All right. I want to move on then myself, and then I'm going to open at least the last half of our time together up to whatever it is you want to talk about. But Are you hearing, I mean, we have put out the call and put out the call here and in the social media and in the email stream for people to get a hold of their legislator about 476. Are you feeling any response from the people on that?
I have not heard from anyone in the last couple of weeks, probably, with the exception of a citizen from another district who has come to the Capitol and walked the halls and talked to legislators and staff herself. And tremendous job. I'll mention her by name because she deserves some credit. Laura Housewildon.
Oh, yeah.
Been there on two occasions. And so I really appreciate her help and energy in that. I did talk to one of the speaker staff members and ask him if he was hearing anything, and he said, yeah, but he indicated that's going to have to be ramped up quite a bit for it to gain the attention of the speaker.
Okay. So listen, folks, 476, we've talked about it every time we've had Mike here. We even talked about it extensively last week when Mike couldn't make it. And this is the article of impeachment. Now, you know, the way I present this when I put it out on social media is, you know, I hear you folks out there complaining about these very things that are going on. I see post after post after post in the social networks every day about people being without representation in Jefferson City, about the many lawless acts of our governor. And here it is right here. H.R. 476 is Mike Moon's specific article of impeachment against the governor. And the only way this is going to work out is if you folks get out there and get a hold of the people who represent you in Jefferson City and say, we need this done. So let's get that moving. And while you're at it, 380, that's H.R. 476 and H.R. 380. 380 is Marshall's impeachment action. One more thing I want to hit on, Mike, before I turn it totally over to you, is 613. How's that doing?
I don't think that was mentioned on the floor this week. And let me just check if you want to chat some more, I'll look up and see the latest on that.
But, well, it is at General Laws now as well, and it needs to be voted out of there, and then I believe it has to go to Rules, and from there it can find its way to the floor. I just wondered how the air was up there, how the atmosphere was, what the feelings are on that, because that one was, as I understand from my discussions with Ron Calzone, the goal there was to get that thing out, signed and on the governor's desk in time to get it back after the veto and before the session expired.
I lost my microphone. That was the hope for me and many others with regard to several bills, the tax cut bill included. Mm-hmm. And there's still maybe time for that. But I see what you're looking at here. It's been referred. It looks like it was referred to Rules on the 6th.
Oh, really?
So okay. It made it past General Laws, it looks like. And so that should be coming, and I imagine Jeannie Riddle's committee will pass that out without any problems, get back to the floor for debate. And so I expect to see that on the calendar soon.
Good. Okay, well, we'll be following that. Okay, now I've hit on the things that I wanted to make sure that we got to tonight, and I want to pass on to you another huge thank you for 41 and 2036, as well as for 476. But 41 and 2036 are huge for us in the state sovereignty department here. So why don't you take it, Mike, and let the listeners know what you think important is going on up there this week.
Well, I'm not relying on citizens only to contact their representatives and senators, although I would appeal to them to continue doing that. We have a huge education educational process to encounter and complete with the legislators themselves. And the reason is there are many who don't know what impeachment is. Some think that it's actually a conviction and removal from office, but it's not.
Ah.
So this week I started something that I plan to continue on a regular basis without getting to the point of bombarding and becoming a nuisance to the other legislators, but I sent out to the entire House just a few paragraphs here. And here's what it says. I'll just read it to you so that those who are listening can understand what I'm trying to get across. Impeachment is a constitutional process used by legislators to ensure that the two other branches of government do not overstep their authority. Impeachment is the first of two steps, which are used to remove an official who has subverted his office in some way. Impeachment is not a guilty verdict. It's not a trial. It's a preliminary to a trial, and it's similar to a grand jury. And imagine yourself as a Missouri state trooper. You notice a vehicle traveling at a high rate of speed, endangering other motorists. You successfully stop the car and approach the driver. As an officer of the law, you could do one of two things: ignore the law and allow the driver to continue his reckless habit, or, because you've taken an oath to uphold the law, issue a citation to the driver, no matter who it is. The ticket is not pronouncing judgment on the driver. It's merely leveling a charge against the driver, and then the driver will have the opportunity to plead guilty or defend himself in court. So the articles of impeachment filed against Governor Nixon is similar to writing a ticket. We as legislators can ignore the law and allow him to continue full steam ahead, or we can tear the ticket from the ticket book, deliver it to him, and allow him to plead guilty or defend himself in front of a panel of seven judges. So I sent that out, and surprisingly, I didn't get that many responses, and that may be okay, but I did get a message back from one of the Democrats, and here's what he said. Impeachment is also a way to play politics. This governor has done nothing, or has not done anything that has been done before, or hasn't been done before, and do not warrant such action. If you get it to the floor, then we'll discuss it. Until then, stop trying to sell it. And so I replied in like manner, just telling him that I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm just attempting to educate, because there are some who I believe don't know what impeachment is, and this man may not either. But according to the Constitution and the articles for the revised Missouri statute, 8 to 14 months without a filling of a seat, if you're saying that is not delaying, then your dictionary is much, much different than mine is. And so I'm going to take this seriously over the next several weeks, as long as I need to, and try to educate the legislature and hopefully at least get them thinking about what impeachment is, and that we do need to get it to the floor and debate it and let the panel of seven judges decide whether there has been wrongdoing. And so that's my hope, and I believe we can get it done if we continue. And I want to encourage, too, the listeners, if you do contact your representative or senator, be kind and be gentle, because they may not understand the process. And if they come back at you with an arrow, don't take that to heart. Just kindly respond, and then you can begin a dialogue and hopefully win them over.
No, exactly. And folks, I want to reiterate that, and we've said this before. You know, these folks, some of them you disagree with, some of them you disagree with vehemently, some of them you don't think have a clue. But the fact of the matter is that they are doing a job up there. They are elected representatives, and they demand all of the respect that you would give anybody in that position. So when you contact these people, be nice. I mean, I'm nice when I contact Claire McCaskill. I don't say what I think. half the time. I speak my mind bluntly and frankly, but I'm respectful and I'm nice about it. So, yeah, what Mike said there, and there are some hotheads up there who will come back at you with something a little bit less social than what you presented, and just come back with try to keep the conversation civilized and exactly right. But yeah, you're right, Mike. You know, and that's important for people to, for the listeners to understand too. Impeachment is like an indictment or a presentation of formal charges. It actually sets the stage for the trial, if there is to be one. I'm interested in, and I'm going to get a hold of some of my friends who have a lot more history in the Capitol than I do. Maybe Carl or someone like that, or Ron, who've been hanging around the halls there for years and years. I'm not sure that. First of all, I'm very confident that you know, this guy driving 100 miles an hour down I-44 is an excuse just because people have done it in the past, or just because he's not doing something that other people aren't doing. That's not a defense for anything, but I'm pretty confident that we probably have not been this egregious amount of time between a vacation of a seat and the filling of it by governors in the past.
Yeah, I don't know that this long of a period has gone on. I talked to someone in a different place of authority about a week or two ago, and they were talking about the impeachment and why I did it, and said that they had requested in the past a couple of weeks because they didn't have a candidate when it was a vacancy. Well, I can understand a couple of weeks. I don't know that I would go a couple of months because
sure.
And you really tighten that window that you have
yeah.
to jump through. But this particular individual asked me if I'd be willing to rescind that those articles. And I said, no, I cannot. Because the way I interpret the Constitution, it's a black and white issue.
Yeah.
And if I take those back, then, again, I violated my oath, and I may as well just go home.
That's right.
Their response was not puzzling, but it was something I hadn't thought of before, and they think that the filing of these articles is why I have a primary opponent. And it's really kind of peculiar because I may have mentioned before, I don't remember, if I told you that I do have a primary, and it's the wife of the former legislator who held this seat before me.
Oh.
The thing that puts a wrinkle in it is that he was elected for his fourth term in November of 2012, and before he was seated in January of 2013, he resigned his seat because the governor had appointed him to the Probation and Parole Board. So you can start connecting the dots, and you might think that it could be plausible that he would say, okay, now, Mr. Ruziska, it's time for you to pay back, because apparently the governor has at will the ability to remove people from appointments just the same as he appoints them, then waiting for the approval by the Senate.
Sure.
I don't know if that's true, but I heard it is, and if it is, it makes sense. So in any case, it's Don Ruziska's wife, and we'll meet for the first time tomorrow, and we won't be at a head office. We have our Lincoln Days in Lawrence County tomorrow evening, and if there are any Lawrence Countyans listening in, I invite you to come out about 6 o'clock. At 6:30 we'll have a meal, and if you want to hang around, you'll be able to hear speeches from, I believe, Roy Blunt, Billy Long, Tim Jones, Paul Kurtman, and myself, and love to have you come out and participate.
Great. Well, we'll be watching that race close, and you know, you're our favorite here, but Yeah, that is an interesting turn of events there. And you know, that brings up another point. I mean, I understand politics and in my mind it hasn't been this long with a vacant seat, but I can't remember in my following, in the limited number of years that I've been following Jefferson City closely, a governor so determined to, for some reason, appoint members of the opposite party into executive seats, you know, into positions like this. And of course, we understand that destroys the supermajority. But I don't remember such a bold bipartisanship as Governor Nixon has seemed to show with the filling of slots in his executive branch. Do you?
Well, and I haven't really looked at or followed it closely, but I think this is something that is extremely obvious. That,
yeah.
You know, he's especially on the House side. He has appointed folks who have taken advantage of his offer and reduced the supermajority.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it didn't really help us much to have a supermajority last year. In 11 bills it did, but the ones that really counted with the Second Amendment Preservation Act, and the
tax cut
bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, those were two of the ones that we really wanted to have passed out. And it's going to be a little bit more difficult this year because we don't have the majority that we need. But in any case, we are where we are, and hopefully we can gain some support from the other side of the aisle. And that's still possible, but I'm not holding my breath.
I was going to research this today before we talked because I had asked this question of someone else way, way early in the session, but I'll know the answer before we talk again next week and we can discuss it. Is there anything moving in the House now that you're aware of that does something to limit or restrict the governor's power when it comes to this stunt that he pulled with the tax cut bill where he sequestered money even though there was obviously going to be plenty of money to fulfill the appropriations?
Not that I'm aware of, but that does bring up another concern of mine. It's with House Bill 2014, that's a budget bill that will add about $22 million. I think there's $44 million total, but about $22 million of that will go to the Normandy School District for what I consider a bailout for the remainder of the school year. And when I consider that particular appropriation, I'm not favorable of that at all. And it reminds me of the Wall Street bailouts when you've got a company that has been given all the tools, at least apparently all the tools that they needed. And if not, they could have made some changes and managed it more appropriately than they had. If they don't get more money by the end of the school year, then they're going to go bankrupt. And so I say, let them go bankrupt.
Well, yeah.
I don't think they're any different than another business. They have a CEO and a principal. They have a superintendent that is above him. And I believe that if they do fail, I mean, it's not good for the students, of course, but I think the students are having opportunity to transfer to other schools if they so choose. And some will come behind them and pick up that opportunity and make it even better. But if we continue to bail out companies on Wall Street or schools in our own state, we're only going to perpetuate the problem.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know, when you say it's not going to be good for the students, well, yeah, in the very, very short term, it's not going to be good for the students. But usually what we find is when something that's being run inefficiently or when something that's being run poorly is allowed to bankrupt, something better is bound to rise from the rubble. And so,
yeah.
You know, in the long run, it's going to be much better for the students if something goes on to replace whatever the fail system that's there now.
Well, part of the shortfall is due to their non-accreditation, and they're not fully funded when they're not accredited.
That's
the main reason. But at the same time, what is accreditation? And what does that mean to the student? Does that mean because you're unaccredited, you have poor teachers? No, probably not. It's just that, and I say this tongue-in-cheek partly, but I think there is a lot of truth to it, that the teachers probably didn't teach the test as well as they should have, because the students didn't do as well, and therefore the teachers reflect poorly, and then accreditation is affected in that same light. So it's a multifaceted problem. But one example that I've tried to use in different situations when I'm in hearings or talking to other people outside those hearing settings is that money's not the game changer. I mean, certainly you need money to pay teachers. You need to keep the lights on and to buy curriculum and that sort of thing. But I recall a man named Ben who grew up in Detroit for a time and in the Boston area for a time, and his mother was a single parent. His father had left him at a young age. He had a brother, and they were getting into trouble. They got along okay, but at school, Ben just didn't do well. And so he would come home because he was called the dunce by his fellow classmates, and whenever he would have to reply verbally, he didn't know the answers, and so therein lies the problem there. He was embarrassed and didn't like it. His mother, though, was pretty astute. Even though she was illiterate and working two jobs, she required both Ben and his brother to read three books a week and to write reports, written reports about the books. And at the end of the week, she would have them, while she was looking at the report, even though she couldn't read, she would have them give them a verbal report, or give her a verbal report, so that she could know what they had read. And as a result of Ben and his brother reading all these books, he was sort of escaping the reality. He was living in a poor area, so he would go on these fantasies while reading. And lo and behold, some of the things he read provided answers that he needed in school. And so after a while, the kids would come to Ben and ask him for the answers. And he became feeling a little bit more important, and he began liking school because he was learning things and kind of on top of things a little bit better. And a teacher noticed him and became a mentor to him and challenged him. And then eventually graduated high school, and he became the first neurosurgeon, a black neurosurgeon, mind you, to separate conjoined twins at the head. You may know what I'm talking about. His name is Dr. Ben Carson. And I believe that there are people today who are urging him to run for president. If you haven't heard of Ben Carson, I encourage you to take a look at him and Google, if you will, the presidential prayer breakfast. It's an amazing story.
That was something, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think with folks like him, and that's what I'm trying to reiterate to these not just liberals, but conservatives too, who are thinking that we've got to give these folks money. Well, they've already had the money. Let's let them fail. Let them learn from the mistakes, pick back up, regroup, and then maybe something good will come out of it. So that's what I'm hopeful to do. And unfortunately, we don't have many listening ears.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but we just keep striving, Mike. Okay, I know you're on a schedule. I want to thank you very much for coming along. I want to wish you luck tomorrow at Lincoln Days, and you folks out there in Lawrence County, head out to Lincoln Days tomorrow. Brave the rain and go out and see Mike and hear him talk, meet him, shake his hand. Give him your support in this upcoming primary. When's the primary, Mike?
It'll be August 5th.
August 5th, okay.
So quite a ways down the road, but still a lot of work to do.
Yep. Okay, and you let us know what we can do for you. We'll look forward to talking to you next week, and we appreciate everything you do, Mike.
Thank you, David. Good night to you.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night. We'll be back.
To cold climb, come spring.
let me hear you say, my love, I'm gonna stand my ground. They rise to me and blow them down. I am gonna stand my ground. They rise to me and blow them down. I am gonna stand.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
Back. Thanks, Mike Moon. Great Monday or Friday nights with Mike. A little insight into what's going on in the Capitol. What you want to do, the action items you want to take away from our talk with Mike tonight is an email to Caleb Jones, the chairman, and Todd Richardson, the vice chairman of the General Laws Committee. And ask that HCR 41 get moving. Mike is working with them now to get a hearing going, but just make sure that people get it that that you're on board with that. Now, here is something that I'm really surprised at and truly disappointed in, that our listeners haven't bombarded everyone with a call for H.R. 476, this impeachment thing. What is going on with you folks? 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. It's easy enough to write an email to your legislator and say, look, you know, we've had it with this governor. There are constitutional requirements that come along with this job, and this governor has failed miserably. You know, more than a quarter of a million Missourians have no representation in Jefferson City for this entire term because of this governor dragging his feet on these special elections to fill seats that he vacated by appointing members of the opposite party to inconsequential executive seats. It's also important for you folks to see through what Mike was talking about with this primary challenge of his down there in Lawrence. We'll be talking about that more with Mike in the near future. Whatever you can do to help, you need to do to help, because Mike is a real friend of liberty down there in Jefferson City. Okay, we're going to move on now with our Convention of the States Amendment. Hold on a second. I've had a bit of a... I had this open earlier, and... So here, basically, or exactly, is going to be the amendment that we propose as the first and most important amendment that needs to come out of a convention of the states. I mentioned last week that I was undergoing an evolution. This open-ended convention of the states idea, I'm not opposed to it, and I'm still on board with it. I think it probably needs to be done. It's undergoing some evolutions of itself. The call to specifically limit the scope of the federal government quickly became a call to fiscal responsibility and limiting the power of the federal government, and that quickly became a call to fiscal responsibility, limiting the power of the federal government, and defining the terms of the senators and representatives in Washington, D.C. So the call to convention is being expanded to make sure that it covers the specific items that those calling the convention want and exclude all other items. Now, all of our three items, that is the most important amendment that needs to come out of this convention, the repeal of the 17th Amendment and the replacement of the method of selecting senators, the state repeal amendment as the second most important, and the repeal of the 16th Amendment and replacement of the taxation of income with the taxation of consumption. Those three things clearly fill the bill of restricting the power and scope of the federal government. Our third most important, repealing the 16th, clearly fits into fiscal responsibility. And I contend that that the last thing that anyone who cares about state sovereignty wants is a federally mandated term limit on senators and representatives. That is a state sovereignty issue. It's up to your state. It quite frankly is. Now, here's the way my friend Lloyd Thomas Sloan has approached his state repeal amendment, and I'm falling more and more in line with something like this. You write a specific amendment, and you pass it through your state legislature as a resolution calling for the United States Congress to propose this amendment as worded. And you put them on notice that when 32 states have made the same call for amendment, and you've had no action out of the United States Congress in proposing this amendment as written out to the states for ratification, that you will convene a convention. You don't say, we ask that you convene a convention. You say, when 32 states have proposed this to you and you still have not acted, we are going to convene. And we're going to propose it in accordance with Article 5 of the United States Constitution. Now, what you have to do is you have to sell that same amendment to the other states. When you get enough states on board, then you can convene for the purpose of that amendment. All of the states will come together. I mean, it should be a very, very short convention. All of the states have already called for the amendment. All of the states are already on board. All of the states have like wording. So you're going to have no problem once you get 32 states on board with a specific amendment, probably getting Congress to propose it once you hit 27, 28. And should they not, and in the case of these three, they may well not, getting a convention. So we ran through last week the brief history of the 17th Amendment, and we got to the point where your state has lost all sovereignty because of the 17th Amendment. In other words, your state has no place at the table in Washington, D.C., because your state has no representation. The people have representation in the House of Representatives. So it is imperative to understand that you are not depriving the people of the representation, of direct representation in Washington, D.C., not one little bit. Billy Long represents me in Washington, D.C., and you, wherever you live in the state of Missouri, you have a direct representative in Washington, D.C., a person who you can contact, who is there for you, and whom you and a very, very small group of people elected and either keep or fire here in November. Every 2 years, you get a shot at keeping or firing this representative. So you've got representation. The policy group that does not have any longer any representation in Washington, D.C. is the state of Missouri. So the state of Missouri no longer has the power as a state to say, no, we're not going to pass that law because it will cost the state of Missouri. No, we're not going to pass that law because it is not in the best interest of the citizens of Missouri. That's what we lost with the 17th Amendment. Here is the proposed amendment to replace the 17th. It's Amendment 28, and it says simply, Section 1, the 17th Article of Amendment to the Constitution of the United States is hereby repealed. Section 2, beginning with the session that commences after ratification of this amendment, the Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, chosen by the legislature of that state. Each shall serve for 6 years, and each shall have one vote. Section 3. The legislature of each state reserves the right to recall senators at any time. Any senator recalled shall be replaced by the legislature of that state prior to cessation of that senator's service, and any recall senator must be compensated as though they had finished the entire term. Okay, so the legislature can recall the senator at any time. They can't leave an empty seat. So they have to have replaced the senator they're recalling before he actually leaves office. There has to be another senator in that warm seat the next day. Section 4. Each state, and this is important, this is the important deviation from the original wording of the Constitution. Section 4. Each state shall be responsible for the entire compensation of its senators from the general revenues of the state. Each state may establish the compensation for service, but no state shall allow senators to receive compensation from any other source during the term of service. Now, this, in my mind, is what makes this a state sovereignty I want to avoid the word panacea, but this makes the Senate a state sovereign body. Not only does the state legislature appoint and control its senators, but they pay them so that the senator is his or herself a direct employee of the state. They're not federal government employees any longer. Now, the state can put together any kind of compensation package. It can have some kind of a 401k sharing. It can have whatever kind of compensation it needs to make sure that the Missouri legislature is capable of attracting capable people to the job. But the state pays the bill. And I think that's important. Now, what we need to do is we need to get a sponsor in Jefferson City for this. And I'll be working this hard in the next year. We probably will have this ready for presentation in the next session. We're going to push this through the Missouri House and Senate. We're going to get it to Washington, D.C., demanding that Congress propose this amendment to the states. We'll then be working hard with all the other states to try to get this moving. 26 is a key number. With 26 states, we can go into the open convention of the states confident that we will come out with this amendment. With 32 states, we can convene ourselves when the Congress does not act. Now, I don't know. This is going to be an interesting challenge because I am of the opinion that it's likely that the Congress of the United States in this instance, in an instance of so pointedly returning sovereignty to the states, may even balk at proposing the amendment when 32 states are on board. Now, that's never happened in history. A lot of the amendments that we have had to the Constitution have been a result of a sufficient number of states coming on board that Congress saw the writing on the wall and went ahead and acted in its own best interest. It's going to be interesting to see what happens on this one. I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, we'd like to hear from you.
Come the archer, come the we'll be right back.
better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You better not cry, you better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
You go fast and wrong for right and right for wrong. People understand for that for just so long. I don't have the gift of the prophecy.
All right, we're back. Friday night, Hour of Truth. I'm Dave. Want to get into that last commercial break real quick. Missouri Grassroots Coalition, as we say every week, is a zero profit organization. We don't collect dues. We don't collect money for anything. When we need paper clips or pamphlets, we print them out on our own home printers using paper that we bought and ink that we bought. And when we need to travel, we put gas in our own car. We collect money for nothing except the Secret Santa. Every dime that is donated to the Secret Santa goes to the Secret Santa. I preach about this every week, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it tonight. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. The MGC Secret Santa button in the top menu. And use PayPal to send us a couple of bucks. We collect for this all year because it's so hard. It is so hard to beg you for money, and we know it's so hard for you to part with money in October and November and December. So we try to catch you when it's comfortable for you, when it's convenient for you, but we try to tug at your heartstrings every week when we talk to you and let you know that if you find a couple of bucks this week, this is probably the week to do it. MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, the Secret Santa button at the top menu, and use PayPal when you get there. Now, we're here every Friday night and every Saturday night with the Hour of Truth. On Tuesday night, Missouri Grassroots Radio is proud to present Cynthia Davis with Homefront, and Wednesday night, Lisa Payne Nager with the Culture Vigilante. Always great shows. Lisa's probably going to take up two nights a week here pretty soon because she's been running long with some of her marathon shows of good stuff. She gets good guests, and the topics are timely and imperative. 347-677-1835. I'm not staying much longer tonight. So if you want to talk about anything, we're going to go free speech for the last half here. So if you want to talk about anything that we've talked about here in the last couple of weeks or anything that's happening in the news or anything that interests you, bring it on. We'll be glad to let you have your voice tonight. You know, more and more and more every week I am convinced that nothing is going to fix this country except an awakening and a return to the sovereignty of the states the way it was intended. The federal government just keeps getting more and more and more powerful. You know this, I'm amazed. I did a little research this week for a thing I'm writing. And I'm not really prepared to talk about this as much as I should be because I'm just at the initial stages of the research now. But we find program after program, and yeah, I'm going to get to this Medicaid expansion thing. We hear more and more and more about how this isn't going to cost the state of Missouri anything. There's an ad blitz running on the radio now about how, yeah, they're taking tax money from you anyway, and some states have capitalized on this, and now those states are getting your tax money. It's not going to cost you anything in the state of Missouri because the federal government's paying 100% of the bill. And aside from the fact that isn't true, that the federal government is going to pay 100% of the bill supposedly for the first 7 years, I think, and then that percentage is going to creep down to where the state pays a good size hunk of money. I challenge you to go back through history and look at things like the Interstate Highway Program and education, for that matter, and all of these other programs where the federal government was going to foot the bill. And listen to all of the things that you hear states talking about now, specifically when you hear the words unfunded mandate going around. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of programs, some nickel and dime programs, some multi-million dollar programs out there that were foisted off on the states as programs that were going to be funded by the federal government but managed by the states. That year after year after year, we see expenditures rising and federal outlays for those programs declining. Now, that's exactly what's going to happen here. History indicates it's going to happen here. And we just keep traveling down this road. I mean, to get back to my point, nothing is going to fix this except the willingness of the state of Missouri and the state of Tennessee and the state of Florida and the state of Arkansas and the state of Oregon saying, no, we're not going to do this anymore. We're not going to let you do this to us anymore. You work for us. We don't work for you. It's got to happen, and it's got to start. It didn't have to start, but it should start with this repeal of the 17th Amendment. I'm going to call it a night. I hope everybody follows Mike's lead and gets on with this HR 476 thing. The person you need to contact on that is Tim Jones. You can get him at house.mo.gov, and we'll talk to you tomorrow night.
There are so many contradictions. All these messages we send keep asking, how do I get out of here?
though the world is torn and shaken. Even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you to awaken. Someday you will learn to